you guys, Tomes of Terror, which means that it's time to talk about another horror novel. Now, this one right here is called The Devil Crept In by Anya Allborn. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. This is actually the second Anya Allborn book that I've reviewed on the show. If you remember, I read an ebook of If You See Her. I think it was the first episode of this series, and I liked that quite a bit. This one I think is better, mostly because I really, really liked the main protagonist. Now, this book came out in 2017, and I'd seen it recommended on a couple of other BookTube channels. And since I liked If You See Her, then I figured, you know, this would be the logical next one to go with. And as I said, I'm pretty sure, If You See Her, but I think I liked this one a little bit better. So if you want to read this book, I'm not going to spoil the ending, but I will probably spoil some plot points in there. So if you like to go into things like I do, not knowing knowing as little as possible about what the story is and like what, you know, twists and turns happen, then probably you want to read it first and then come back and we can discuss it then. Because I am, like I said, I'm not going to spoil the end, but I might spoil some stuff, you know, plot twists and things like that, that you might not want spoiled. So you've been warned. So we're seeing this story from the perspective of a 10-year-old boy named Stevie Clark. And he lives in Deer Valley, Oregon, with his mom and his older brother, Duncan, who he calls Dunk, and their horrible shithead of a stepfather, whose name is Terry. Now, Stevie, it's never specified what exactly his mental health issue is. He's perfectly intelligent, everything like that. However, he has almost kind of like I almost wanted to say it's kind of like almost like Tourette syndrome, where he has like these verbal tics, where he tends to like repeat the same word over and over, or, you know, he'll say something and then like a bunch of rhyming phrases like after it, and he can't really help himself. And since we're seeing things, it's not in the first person, it's limited third person. So we're kind of like knowing what's going on in his head, and it's very frustrating for him because he's trying to, you know, explain things and he's trying to get things out, and he kind of has, you know, an idea of what he wants to say, but like his brain is kind of disordered. And when he tries to talk, you know, it doesn't come out the way he wanted. And as I said, it's very frustrating for him. And because all the adults in his life and his brother and things like that find him also very frustrating to talk to because of the way that he communicates. He also significantly has had trouble with seeing visual hallucinations in the past, some of which have been pretty severe. One that they bring up a couple of times in the story is that he hallucinated that one of his hands, like the fingers, had turned into worms or snakes or something like that, and it made him shove his hand into the garbage disposal. So he actually ended up losing parts of two of his fingers. You know, not surprisingly, since he's got these issues, he's not a real popular kid. Like, everybody just thinks he's weird or crazy, and no one will really hang out with him. Even though, as I said, since we're seeing the whole entire story from his point of view, he is actually a very sympathetic character, because you can relate to his frustration that sometimes he can't express himself the way he wants to, and sometimes he sees things and he's not sure if they're real or not, and he's aware that he has that, and it's just kind of like, you know, as I said, it makes maneuvering through the world very difficult for him, and he's a very easy to like kid. Now, the only friend that he has is his older cousin, Jude, who I think is 12. And Jude lives next door. Jude's mom, Mandy, is Stevie's mom's sister. Now, Jude's father died not too long before the events of the book. And ever since then, Jude has been kind of like, I don't want to say like a delinquent, but he's kind of he's a little bit of a troublemaker, like a troublemaker kind of kid. Like, he mouths off, you know, he's kind of a daredevil, and like he, you know, runs away and things like that. So he's like a little bit of a problem child, but nothing, you know, too egregious or nothing too. And as I said, it's understandable because of the death of his father, which he's having a hard time adjusting to. Now, him and Stevie hang out all the time. And, you know, they built a fort out in the woods and stuff. Jude's actually kind of a dick to Stevie, like, kind of makes fun of his, you know, verbal tics and things like that. But there does seem to be some genuine affection on both sides, mostly from Stevie's side, because, like I said, that's who we're seeing it from. So the first part of the book, probably the first 100 pages or so, I think, is kind of like a slow buildup of their relationship and their the family dynamic, the kind of frustration that Stevie feels about feeling like all the adults in his life don't really listen to him, or, you know, because of things that happened in the past with his, like, visual hallucinations and whatnot, and find him very frustrating to listen to. So, you know, he's a little bit isolated, and but as I said, still a sympathetic character. So there's just a few hints in the first part of the book that something a little bit weird is going on in this small town. The small town is called Deer Valley. It's in Oregon. There's little things like, remember like 20 years ago where that little, I think he was a 10-year-old boy, maybe, or no, I think he was younger than that. I think he might have been 6. This little boy named Max, who disappeared into the woods one day, and they found him, like, way later. They found his body, and it was kind of like all, it had been buried and whatnot. It's almost kind of like that happened, but no one really wants to talk about it. There's also a thing where people in town don't want to have pets because their pets seem to disappear or wander off, you know, wander off into the woods and never come back. So there is kind of some, there are some hints early on that maybe something is going on in the woods that is not real kosher. So at one point, Jude and Stevie are out in the woods. They're working on their tree fort or whatever, and Jude ends up disappearing. Now, he's gone for quite a while. Stevie is heartbroken, of course, because Jude is his only friend, and he, you know, and he loves him. It's also his cousin, like I said. So he gets the idea into his head, because he's a big fan of, like, true crime, like, detective type of shows, like Unsolved Mysteries and stuff. And he perceives that the people in town are not really looking all that hard for Jude, just because, like I said, Jude is kind of like a troublemaker. And so Stevie thinks that nobody really cares about him disappearing because they just think he ran away. They don't think anything bad is happening. But Stevie begins to suspect otherwise. Especially after he starts seeing kind of shadows of things, like, in the woods, like, kind of like a monster. He thinks he sees a monster. Now, he's not entirely sure if that's real or not, because, like I said, he does have problems with visual hallucinations, but it's enough for him to kind of spur him into action as far as trying to find Jude himself, even though he's only a 10-year-old kid. Now, obviously, the adults in town, they are looking for Jude, but as I said, it's not like a real big priority, because everyone's like, hey, he was just kind of an asshole, that kid. And it's like, you know, he was always causing trouble and he probably ran away. He'll be back and blah, blah, blah. So Stevie gets frustrated and decides he's going to carry out his own investigation. Now, that goes on for a little while. As I said, Jude is gone for, I can't really remember how long he's gone. It's, you know, several days at least. And he's kind of, it's on the news and everything like that. But then one evening, Jude comes back and he just, like, turns up on the porch, like standing on the porch of his mom's house. Now, Stevie, of course, is overjoyed and, you know, wants to go over there and, like, ask, well, you know, what happened to you, who took you, everything like that. But Jude seems not quite the same as he was when he left. And it's almost kind of like, because his mom, Mandy, is so happy that Jude is back, it's almost kind of like she's not realizing how different the kid is now. So this is another thing that's very frustrating for Stevie, because Stevie becomes convinced that when Jude was in the woods, like, something happened to him, something took him, you know, the monster, or maybe there was somebody in the woods that took him and kept him and did something to him, because now he's not really acting the same. It's like every now and then he'll kind of have glimpses that Jude is sort of like he was before, but most of the time, he's just acting really, really strange. Like, he'll just kind of, like, blank out. And then he starts having all these weird physical symptoms where it seems like he's scratching himself all the time. It looks like a real bad sunburn, like his skin starts to kind of peel off and like his lips are just constantly chapped. And it's almost kind of like the adults don't really notice it, or they just think, oh, well, you know, he went under a trauma or whatever. He's back now. Everybody's happy. And let's just forget the whole thing happened, because there's kind of a lot of that kind of stuff going on, like in this book, where the adults just kind of want to forget about shit and like just move on with life or whatever. So after all that happened, like after Jude comes back and he starts acting weird and everything, and then the book kind of takes like a little bit of a left turn, a little detour. And I think at that point it becomes like part two. Now, in this part, you're kind of going back in time somewhat. I believe it's like 20 or 30 years or something like that. And we're following a woman named Rosamond. And she was married to the town doctor back then, whose name was Ansel. And the one thing that she wanted more than anything was a baby. But they tried and tried and she couldn't get pregnant. And she was just getting really, really, you know, she was very saddened by this lack of being able to have children. And then tragedy strikes her again when her husband, Ansel, is killed in a car accident. Shortly after he's killed, she kind of has a freak out and she just kind of gets in the car and drives. And she ends up at this really weird retreat type of place, and it's run by this guy who's kind of like a biker dude named Ras, or like Rasputin, that's what it's short for. And it's almost kind of like a bed and breakfast, but he said without the breakfast, you know, it's like he just lets people stay there. And it's almost like she's drawn to the place, and she kind of tells him all of her problems about, you know, her not being able to have a baby, and then you know her husband dying and everything like that. And he basically asks her, what would you do for, you know, to have a child? And she basically says anything. Now, this retreat, as strange as it is, makes her feel a lot better. She actually ends up going home. And then shortly thereafter, she discovers that she is pregnant. Now, she's a little weirded out by this because she didn't really remember, like, her and her husband, like, having sex before he died. So she's kind of like, well, huh, I don't really know. Like, it doesn't really seem to occur to her all that much, like, until later on. So she ends up giving birth to a severely deformed child that she names Otto. It's left ambiguous as to what Otto is exactly, but as the story goes on, you kind of, it keeps like switching back and forth from the story of like Stevie and Jude and the story of Rosamond and Otto as he's growing up. Pretty soon you're able to discover that these two stories are connected. You know what I mean? It doesn't really take a rocket scientist to figure out what is going on with Otto, and particularly because Rosamond lives in this creepy old house, like out on this logging road, that has been a source of urban legends and things like that, like throughout the town, and which Stevie and Jude are kind of like scared to go to. So from that point forward, as the two stories kind of like keep going back and forth and intersect, Jude starts to get more and more fucked up, and he starts to start running away, almost like he wants to go back to whoever was keeping him, like when he was missing for all of that time. And as I said, Stevie, who's kind of like a very shy, very introverted, a little bit, you know, cowardly kind of kid, he sort of has to come to the realization that, look, no one is going to help Jude. Nobody knows what's going on but me. Nobody believes me about there's a monster in the woods. Nobody believes that something's the matter with Jude. And he's like, so I have to figure this out all on my own. I have to save him because he's my best friend. And so that's pretty much what the kid has to end up doing. Now, interestingly, I said I wasn't going to spoil the end, but there is something that happens at the end, like in the epilogue, that sort of casts the entire story in maybe a different light. This might be, like I said, this might be a little spoilery, but it's left ambiguous as to whether Stevie is a completely reliable narrator, because as I said, he had problems with visual hallucinations before, and his hallucinations were horrifying and were so real to him, like I said, that he ended up maiming himself at one point. So the way that the ending goes, it could go either way. Like, either the stuff in the book happened exactly the way Stevie perceived it to have happened, or it happened differently and Stevie was just seeing it in a different way because he was hallucinating, or he was like primed to see it in that way. I think it's more likely that it really did happen the way, you know, particularly because it starts going back and forth with the story of Rosamund and her baby, like Otto, and him growing up and becoming like a monster, essentially. I guess you're like led to believe that Stevie is perceiving things correctly, but it's just interesting because it seems like a lot of the townspeople don't really see things the same way that Stevie sees them. And I'm not really sure. I think the point of the book is that poor Stevie, he's had such mental health issues in the past, and everybody is kind of like used to him seeing things and him not being able to explain things correctly because his, you know, his disordered thoughts and whatnot. So it's almost kind of like when something bad does happen, no one believes him because they just think, oh, he's seeing things again like he did that last time, or maybe he's not explaining it right because he can't talk correctly and all this other kind of stuff. So I think that the best thing about this book was just the depth of Stevie's character and how much he really felt for this kid, because you could really put yourself, you know, in the shoes of a 10-year-old boy who had had these previous issues, and something horrific is happening to the person you love more than anything else in the world, and you're trying to get help from all the adults around you and nobody believes you, or like no one will help you. And for him having to, you know, essentially just like a 10-year-old kid having to go out there and like save his best friend, or try to anyway, and fighting against what he perceives as maybe like a supernatural evil or something like that. You know, it's just it's kind of like a heartbreaking story, because like so many terrible things like happen to this poor kid. Like I said, this actually, the second Anya Allborn book that I've read, and I really liked it quite a bit. It was a real enjoyable, it's kind of, like I said, it starts out kind of slow, but not in a bad way. It's kind of, it's just building up the character, building up the relationships, you know, building up, you know, the fact that there's kind of this urban legend shit about the woods and everything like that. So it's kind of like a slow start. But once once Jude goes missing and then comes back and that whole thing, then it's just kind of like off to the races. Once you get like to that point, it's really, but like I said, I think that the first part of the book, you needed that, because it does really good for you to get into Stevie's head. You really kind of like empathize with his frustration at everyone around him and not helping him when he clearly needs some help saving his cousin. So I thought that was like a really great aspect of it. It's a really interesting story. It's not like the most original story ever, but it's just kind of like, it's just done really well. Very fast paced once it gets to, you know, about the midpoint, not even the midpoint, like 100 pages in. And then it just kind of goes, it's very, very gruesome. Like some pretty grody shit happens in this. Lot of trauma against animals, lots of trauma against children, just really, really horrible, horrific stuff happens. So if you don't like real gruesome, like gory shit, like it doesn't, there's not much of it in the beginning, but the more it goes on, like the more and more grisly it gets, you know what I mean? Until like the end, you're like, holy crap, you know what I mean? So it does kind of go in that direction. So just know that going in before you read it. But yeah, overall, I really had a good time with this book. It's just a real fun, it's not like, you know, it's not like super deep or super anything like that. It was just like a fun, you know, just a fun, enjoyable, like horror ride. And you know, so in that way, I thought it was like, you know, a really, really good, really entertaining book with a really, really good sympathetic central protagonist who, like I said, you know, you're rooting for this kid like the whole way through. And it's just so a lot of times it's like really it's really heartbreaking to see, because it's like he's just so young and he just has all these limitations, and you know, the fact that he has to be brave and like do all this stuff anyway, so it really, really makes you kind of like love this kid. And honestly, it's like, even though the way that he talks, because I saw a couple of reviews of this on maybe Goodreads or something like that, where a couple people thought, well, the way that he talks was like too, like it was too annoying, like they couldn't really read through it. But I don't really find that to be the issue. Yes, he does like repeat himself a lot, and sometimes he will say a sentence, but then he like comes up with all these rhyming phrases like that rhymes with like the last word of the sentence or whatever. But actually, that didn't bother me. I actually found it kind of charming, like kind of endearing, because I could picture the kid, and I could like hear his voice, and I could hear the stuff that he was saying. So that didn't really bother me at all. Your mileage may vary, of course. But yeah, so again, just a real decent, fun horror read with pretty gruesome, might be a little bit of supernatural kind of shit. Not a lot supernatural, but it does have a little bit of a supernatural, maybe demonic sort of thing. It's mostly like based in the real world kind of, but there is a little bit of a supernatural element. But yeah, so I would definitely recommend it, and I will likely be reading some more of her stuff because she's got a bunch of other books that are also well reviewed. Because I liked these first two so much. Like I said, I like this one probably better than the first one of hers that I read. But yeah, this is called The Devil Crept In, Anya Allmorn, and it came out in 2017. And that'll do it for this Tomes of Terror, and I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.